Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Huey Off the Record. This is episode 3, and it's cool because we got the pod god, the master caster himself. That's as far as I'm letting the puns go. So that kind of means we have a two-part vibe. It's, of course, the one and only Mr. Scroobius Pitt, my G from ways back, man. And I did an episode on his podcast, Distraction Pieces, last week, and he's on mine this week. And you can check it on the Distraction Pieces Podcasting Network. It's a mouthful, G. So this is kind of a two-part conversation, as I mentioned before. Check Pip's Distraction Pieces anyway. If you haven't, it's awesome. There's so much stuff there. Back catalog-wise, you're gonna be enveloped for a long time with the dopeness because he's a real G and it's awesome. Me and that dude, Pip, we've connected for a while. So it was great to finally get around to having these conversations. Honestly, I have to say, aside from all he puts out in the world, music, books, the awesome merch, podcasts, his label, of course, this guy's a true gent, smart, generous, and very real. And I had a great time recording this pod with him, and I hope you guys enjoy it too. A quick heads up before we begin, we're doing a dope merch giveaway for the whole month of May over at HueyMorgan.com. All you got to do is head over there, subscribe to my mailing list with your name and email, and that's it. And you'll be automatically entered into a prize draw with one of the 5 exclusive merch bundles. We got exclusive Huey Off the Record t-shirts, hashtag the People's Champ hats, signed copies of my book, Huey Morgan's Rebel Heroes, and some signed prints of Fun Loving Criminals frontman. That's right, me. Because I got him kind of discounted. So do it now. Open up your browser. Head over to HueyMorgan.com. Enter your name and email. And you'll be in the running for some cool swag. Of course, you know the drill, but I've been asked to repeat it. So if you're enjoying this podcast, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Help us climb up those pod charts and all that good stuff. And we can keep doing these dope pods for you. Okay, let's get to it. Here's me and Pip.
It's one of the things that we learned when uploading the podcast was we were initially uploading them in stereo.
Yeah, because you figure you'd do people a favour.
Yeah, but that means you're actually losing quality because you're uploading 2 files and podcasts can only hold a certain amount of space. So my girl was like, I upload them in mono now and we can have a higher quality, but it's just not that slight.
It's weird.
One earphone or the other.
It's weird when you, with the gear, though, man, because when I first listened to podcasts, you know, it was kind of DIY kind of vibe, lot like this, but with the old kind of contraptions, be it a cassette tape. I had a guy do one with an old cassette, and when the 30 minutes was up, it just went click. He's like, all right, that was a good podcast.
You know, I love that. That's just where it ends.
But it kind of comes back to that with things like this, where this is kind of great because you can just kind of stick it in your pocket, but you have the high-tech bit. And I imagine it's just, you know, the more you do it, the more you hear things that can be bettered. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean,
because I'm a record producer, you're getting into that shit too. So it's like.
But that's exactly it. It's kind of, I'm a massive believer in podcasts that it can be of almost any quality. Like, it's endless. Like, when I did my book based on the podcast, I had a bit at the end saying, here's all the kit I use, because people always ask me.
But that was a cool part. It was like gear. Yeah, it was like the gear page.
That's it. I kind of made a big point as well of saying, you don't need any of this, though. Mm-hmm. Like, because, again, I remember the first time I heard a podcast and they were talking to someone over Skype. I was like, the quality's so bad, I can't handle this. Yeah. I listen to hundreds like that now. If the content's good, the content's good. I remember Joe Rogan doing one, interviewing Dana White on a plane, just recording it on his iPhone.
Oh, really?
And it's, again, tens of millions of listens. It's like, it's not perfect, but...
Yeah, I think
it's good. It's good. You want to listen?
I mean, do you want it to sound like a Steely Dan record?
Exactly.
You
know?
I mean, I did. I told you I did one with Tim Latham, right? And he's an engineer, mix engineer.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was kind of like, all right, he'll send me a left and a right, and then like he goes, I'll try to mix it down. You know, it's like, okay, but I think we're going to keep the Skype version. He's like, why? I was like, because it's kind of cool. I'm in my man cave in my house in the English countryside, and you're on Long Island. You know, so I think that's kind of cool sometimes. Cause it's, I guess, it's the context that shit's in.
Completely. Every time I've heard a podcast that's kind of, I've listened and thought it's got issues, it tends to be down to the person producing it is used to producing records.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get the cleanest vocal possible. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, as we had said when you were on mine, we in a bar, there's some good sound, there's some background, mm-hmm. things like that is a good thing. It's not about cleaning it out to get this pure vocal. It's
how people listen to it as well. Because a lot of times people listen to it on headphones. That's a lot of, like 80% of them it's on headphones. And that means you're kind of immersing yourself in a different world.
Completely.
And sometimes those little sounds are great because it keeps the brain involved and like stuff like that.
Yeah, coming up kind of in spoken words, I was asked for ages if I'd do a spoken word album. I never did until I did a live one because I was like, every time I tried it in the studio, it felt too dead. There wasn't enough there. Yeah, there wasn't any atmosphere.
No energy. Yeah, that's the trip too. Because a lot of times, you know, when we do radio, right? Radio is a good kind of idea because that's like the last intimate medium, really.
Yeah, completely.
When you listen to radio, you listen into radio. You can have it on the background, but when you listen to it, it's like all there. You're all 100%. Into it. And I was, you know, it's kind of strange, especially when you're trying to catch a moment and there's nobody there.
Yeah.
It's like being in the studio recording vocals. It's great if like two or three of your friends there with a 40 and a blunt or something like that.
But
if you're by yourself, a lot of times it's just, you kind of can't catch it. Bounce it off.
I've recorded tons of vocals on my own, and then on mine and Dan Lesak's last record, we were recording in someone else's studio. So it was only the fact that Dan was there and two other people.
Yeah.
It easily across the whole record is the best vocal performances I've done, because I'd do one and come out and people would be like, "That was a," like, I'd be hyped about it, and I'd be like,
"That's cool,
that's awesome." It hyped me up rather than me going, "I think I've got it. Let's do one more take." Do you know what I mean? It gets you there.
Well, I mean, that's Duke Ellington said, like, you know, recorded music is just an estimation of the live event.
And
I guess in the last, you know, since modern music, like all the swing records and shit like that, it replaced live music and live venues. They used to play records for people to dance boogaloo to or whatever back in the 40s 100%. And the 50s. And then it was the DJ kind of start coming up in the late 60s and the 70s. And now it's kind of like if you see a band, it's kind of an odd thing.
Yeah.
Like this venue, we're at the Edition in London again. Our friends here at the Edition let us hang out in the basement. But to put a live band on here, you'd have to change things. Yeah. Usually at old school venues, it was a stage. And then for live bands, you just put people on stage.
Yeah. Completely, you'd need to bring in the right kit and the right.
They look like they got great PA though.
100%, 100%, and that's the thing that gets weird, and it's an interesting one as hip hop's kind of developed as well. Because rap for years, for me, I'd go and see rap shows. It wouldn't be that good, like because rappers weren't Wu-Tang about Clan, live performance.
I love Wu-Tang Clan. I mean, I love them, but 16 guys shouting down mics isn't a good show. It's not like they're you know, it's not like RZA is on the faders pulling them up and down. They're just all
completely. And there isn't a right or wrong to it though. I remember when the Roots first started to come over to the UK, I was like, that's how you do a hip hop show, because the band's amazing, the performance is amazing, but that's how it's right for them. I then saw other hip hop acts add a band because adding a band's good. It sounded garbage. Again, you've not got the mix, you've not got the vocal that cuts over.
LL did that.
You don't want to see LL with
Mama
a band,
said,
right?
Knock you out acoustic or like on plug.
Yeah, man,
like,
you don't want to hear that. So it is. It's finding the balance. As said, I remember I saw a Run the Jewels a year or two ago, and they just had a DJ, but it's just MCs and backing tracks. It wasn't a live band. It wasn't this and that, and it banged harder than anything I've heard. So again, I think that's the thing. People will get into these, oh, the answer is is a live band, or the answer is this.
Well, if there's a problem, that's like, it's the easiest thing to say, like, oh, well, you don't have what these guys have.
Yeah.
And that's always real. I saw the best hip-hop show I've ever seen was KRS-One.
Yeah.
At, I think it was the Tibet concert out in New York on Randall's Island. Yeah. The Beastie Boys were headlining.
Yeah.
He came out. I mean, there were great bands playing, and it was great. It was rock stuff. And then KRS-One came out, and his DJ, whatever they had, it was the loudest shit of the day.
Yeah.
He came out, he did Sound of the Police, came out with that, and the place just fell apart.
Because it's clean,
think of that record, just not much going on. It's like a beat,
yeah,
a little bit of a bass line, and that weird sample, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That comes in and out. And he just fucking railed it and did like a good straight 45 minutes, and just, you knew everything. So you're shit. And it was just nice, loud, but it wasn't like, it was power over volume. But it was just him. He didn't have a hype man, which is another thing. Like, dudes have hype men now. It's like, Rakim didn't have a hype man.
No, exactly. I mean, I always loved, I remember seeing an interview with KRS talking about the first BDP record. And all these artistic choices in my mind, I'm like, wow, the beat just goes long at the end and all this. It was like, no, we only had one day in the studio. So the beat had been made.
Yeah.
I rapped over it. We didn't have studios to cut it shorter or to adjust it. It was like, that is what it is. So on the tracks, and it's the same with a lot of Rakim stuff and stuff like that. When the beat's going long for ages at the end, it's like, no, that's because they'd made enough to make sure the vocals didn't run out of space. They didn't really have the means to cut that down or chop that down or get another day in the studio to do it. It's like, let's put the record out.
Because what happens, like, old school engineers would hit record, point to the rapper, and then go outside and have a cigarette.
Yeah.
And then come 100%. Back in 4 minutes later when they knew that the loop was over, and those guys just be like, what was the end of that Rakim record? We've been in the studio too long, yada, 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 talking about Fish and all this
kind of shit. Yeah.
Talking about Girl Won't Like Me because I've been in the studio too long, all that kind of shit, because they had all that time.
Yeah.
But that's like, I think, you know, the whole point of doing a podcast as well as like old being a hip hop dude, it's keeping it, they say, real a lot, but keeping it real.
Yeah.
Essentially how life is. 100%. And that's cool. You have fucked up background sounds. And what do we have? Like the air conditioner in the back today?
Yeah, the air conditioning's on.
It's a nice joint, though. You gotta come here at night.
Start moving. Yeah, it's nice. It's
got a lot of cool stuff. Yeah, my boy Ben's been solid with me for 20 years now.
Yeah.
And he's part of this one and the one in New York. And
stuff. Yeah. I like it because it's got the perfect, and it sounds as if we're doing an advert for the place now, but we're talking honestly. It's got the perfect mix of clean and grimy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It is, it's clean and fresh, but you're not walking in and feeling as if you can't, you can't put a drink down or anything. It's it's a good spot. I like it.
And it's great because now both times that we've spoken on podcasts, we've been doing it here at this spot. So the Addition is kind of like our home away from home.
It's our little base, yeah.
It's our London crib, man.
It makes a massive difference, man, when you don't live in London, to have somewhere where you can go and use that space to just talk to people. And I use Acast, have got a little studio. Use that every now and then. But still, it's genuinely, I've had nightmares before in a panic of trying to find where I can just set up and chat, because
You have a little bit more of an extendo rig. But
I've got
I'm
looking into it. I'm getting one. It's
and
it's
a little fuzz bubble to put on the top and stuff. A little pantyhose for the microphone
way.
On it.
That's the way. I'm going into that. It's got to be done.
Well, dude, I did want to ask, because the thing that I kind of that I admire about you, and I think as a lot of people always touch on this about you in particular, right, is, like, I have a friend, and this guy, DJ Die, you know, from Represent.
Right,
the Boogie DJ.
Yeah.
He's my man. He's a producer. I work with him all the time. He was talking about evolving, the word evolving. Yeah. He's like, we're not getting older, man. We're evolving. I was like, no, evolving is more than just putting notches on your belt. It's about moving forward, but sometimes, like I say, sometimes we're in the Northwest or Northeast, but you're moving north. You know what I'm saying?
So
that kind of thing. When I guess it was from last time we were talking. I was thinking about how you were saying, like, a lot of stuff. I do the label. It's like a labor of love.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of things in our life make it possible for us to have labors of love.
100%, man.
So, I'm interrupt. But when you first started getting into speaking your mind, because that's what podcasting is.
You're
unfiltered, and it can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
Did you ever just say, hey, I'm just going to do whatever I want? If people grime it, great.
100%. I was at the time, I'd had a show on XFM called The Beatdown, and I did a Joe Rogan's podcast in America, and I'm a big fan of it. And he kind of said to me, he was like, I was saying, I've got this radio show, it's going down well. And he was like, so, but why do you do it for someone else? And I was like, well, they're on, you know, it's commercial radio. It's on. He's like, but why do you do it for someone? He's like, the internet exists now. So
Joe at that Rogan. Point, yeah, thanks, Joe.
Yeah, he kind of updated me on that.
That's good. It's evolution, there is
the
man.
Internet. But and again, it was exactly that. I was like, I'd done like however many shows. I've been doing the Beatdown for a year or two, and I won a couple of Sony Awards, which was completely unexpected, and I was on a bit of a gap. I was taking a month or two off, and I went into them and said, look, if it's cool with you, I'm just going to go off and do the podcast thing. For me, it occurred to me that everything I was listening to was podcasts. I wasn't listening to as much radio as I used to, and if I was, I was listening to it on Listen Again, and when I'm choosing my own time. So because of that, it took away that reason of being on the airwaves. Do you know what I mean? If I'm listening on Listen Again, that's the same as listening to a podcast. It's independent listening.
And actually, with that, I mean, because I thought that it was... And actually, back then, when Joe told you the internet existed, I guess there weren't a lot of people getting into the podcast thing.
And there weren't in the UK. It was weird because, again, I feel bad. I get a lot of love for being there early on and for kicking off a lot of the long-form interviews in the UK podcasting. But Joe Rogan and Mark Maron and people like that were who I was listening to. And I don't know. I guess it gave me the confidence to do that. Mm. So rather than the point of doing distraction pieces as 60 to 90 minute unedited interviews was seeing that, particularly on commercial radio and a lot of places, it was kind of really going down to smaller and smaller sound bites. Even interviews with bands. You'd have a band in and it'd be a sound bite from that, from when you met up and hung out.
I don't even do interviews anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's like, they're like literally going there, okay, the interview's going to be how long? Well, we have two segments of 5 minutes. I was like, then what do you, you know.
Yeah.
You know, tell the dude to send me some sound bites because I can't get anything unique out of somebody.
There's not a lot of point, is there? Yeah. Particularly, and again, understandably, like having been on both sides, having been on promo runs, it's that thing, it's like, well, I know dude wants to get his plugs in.
Yeah.
So I need to, if we've only got two small bits, I need to allow him that. I can't be kind of, it's my show.
What's your favorite color, homie? Exactly. And don't tell me about the new record.
Yeah, it's getting those points in. And the beauty I figured of long form interviews was you can cover all of that, but no one can stay in promo mode.
Yeah. And that's
for actually, that long. And that's what makes them interesting.
See, I thought when you first came out with this distraction pieces, I was listening and I was like, you know what? This is how I want to get my information.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, I guess with on demand, because now everything's on demand.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago when you started, people were kind of doing it, but it was kind of like, we kind of do this because we're millennials and we're lucky. We like to mess with the internet.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
older
yeah.
folks, like older folks, people in their 30s or whatever, or 40s, were like, yo, this is we don't have to watch the news at 7 o'clock or we don't have to wait for this show to be on. And that was kind of, it was groundbreaking because all of a sudden your time is your own.
It's crazy, again. Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
completely. And radio is a prime example of that. I remember when I was a kid, you'd be tuning in for the rock show or for whatever else at a specific time. And then
waiting up for some song to come on the radio so you could tape it.
Yeah.
You
know, that kind of shit. You're like, exactly. Genuinely, my listening to like the charts was I would get to start listening after it finished because I wanted to listen on my Walkman walking around.
Yeah,
so
the
charts would start at 7. I couldn't listen until 8 because I'd be recording it at 7 and not listening so I can go out and enjoy it on my headphones. And that seems crazy now. That
it's bizarre that I guess it's just the information age. And I look at like my son who's 5 and a half. He can navigate that stuff without thinking about it consciously. It's just a tool.
Yeah.
For us, we're like, wow, look at this thing. It's so small. You know, and you can do all this shit with it. So we're still in the wonder years when I think the younger kids are just looking at it as for what it is. But everything on demand, I think, actually, I was in the gym the other day and they were playing a shitty music. I turned it down. I had headphones on, but I could hear it through my headphones. I turned it down. The guy's like, what's up? I was like, life's too short to listen to shitty music.
Damn right.
And he's like, well, do you have anything better? I said, no, that's why. I'd rather not have whatever the fuck that is in my brain.
Yeah,
you
know,
so you got to be careful. People talk about nutrition. They don't want to put shit in their body. Like eat McDonald's. Yeah. Nah. It's like, I'm kind of like that with other stuff.
100%. Yeah. I don't want to muddy the waters.
Yeah, I mean, there's enough weird shit going on in the world that I'm distracted by a lot of other shit
that I can't avoid. If it's avoidable, then
I don't need to sing Britney Spears songs for 2 weeks. I can't get the fucking earworm out.
I think it's interesting as well because we're also in a transitional period of how we analyse and note the listenership or effectiveness. Mm-hmm. I'll give an example. So a station like Capital, which again I'm not having a go at, I'm not against, but that's a station that you get their radar listener figures through or whatever, and it'll be really high. But it's also the kind of station that you would have on in the background, and you might not be paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a podcast or six or music or things like that, the listenership may be lower than Capital, but the follow through is a lot higher. Because if you're listening to a podcast, it's because you've chosen to. Mm-hmm. It's on at that point, and you're giving it more often than not your full attention. Anytime I'm listening to a podcast and I realise I've drifted, I'll generally rewind back because I'm like, oh, what's going on? I mean, I've missed a bit of the conversation. Yeah. So you don't do that with, as said, a more pop commercial radio. It's just there. It's on in the gym. It's there in the background. Yeah. It's that dude who's like, I just want something on while I'm lifting weights and looking in the mirror.
I couldn't understand. Like, I'm just trying to do my cardio, man. I ain't trying to hang out and dance while I'm trying to fucking do my cardio. Yeah. But it's with that, I think that's why podcasts, people are very personally involved, as you said, because they're kind of, it's undivided attention at certain points. Now, I think that actually makes the connection.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's on maybe on a different frequency than you would if you go to a movie or if, you know, you watch something on TV.
Completely.
Because you said, if you drift, you rewind because you want to be in the moment, moment, which is kind of trippy. But that's kind of a cool thing that people actually care again. Because there was a whole point where no one gives a fuck about anything. Everybody's too blasé. They were like, I don't care. What about this new Drake record? I don't care.
Yeah. The whole kind of the trend of I don't know what the swearing policy is, but the trend of zero fucks given and stuff like that. It's like, it's cool to give some fucks sometimes, man.
There should be some
stuff
shit
you should care about. It's like, it's great that you're chilled about this, but there's some shit going on that you should maybe give a few.
There's a lot of shit going on. Like, what was it, that song Whatever, right? The United States of Whatever. That pretty much summed up a good period of time.
Yeah.
And now everybody's giving a shit, but it's also they're not letting other people give a shit about stuff they don't agree with, which is kind of weird. Yeah. But that's, like you're saying about transitional.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going on right now. Because we are kind of at this point. There was this dude, Ray Kurzweil, the dude who made the keyboards. I talked about I talked about this book, right?
Yeah.
The Singularity is Near. And I think I checked it after I hung with you again. I was like, I can look some of these graphs. Because he's got graphs and shit in the book. You're like, fuck. But you get your slide rule out and you read it three times and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This is pretty interesting that now we could be 10, 15 years away from literally, instead of having a phone or a recording device, shit could be installed in us.
Yeah.
Like biology and technology, like seriously coming together. So I always find the transition is a lot of people fighting the obvious stuff like racism, sexism.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we kind of know what's right. And like the collective us, that is fucked up. We can't be racist. You know, that is fucked up. We can't be sexist.
Yeah.
But we still do it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, I think, is the thing that's shifting out. So people stopped caring because they thought everything would just happen without them caring.
Yeah.
And it did. And now they realize they didn't want it to happen that way.
The problem...
It's like remorse.
Completely. But the problem starts to come in when people are caring almost for the sake of caring to be seen caring. Because all of them subjects, they're nuanced, man. They're insanely nuanced. A racism or any of these. So if you're jumping straight on, oh, this person has said this, therefore they're a Nazi.
I've heard Nazi get thrown around a lot, man. People are,
and again, it is stuff that you need to be keeping in check and keeping an eye on. But equally, you need to be aware that there's variation. I always remember seeing, I think it was on a Bill Burr stand up. He was saying. I'm the right amount of racist, and again, it's a weird saying, but he was saying, if I go into a Chinese restaurant and I look back and the chef's white, I'm not happy. I want a Chinese guy making what it's like. Yeah. He's like, that's technically racist, but he's like, I'm the right amount of racist. He's like, so it's finding those, it's being comfortable with expressing those nuances and and learning from it.
I think what's important to note is that it's kind of like when he says to the right amount of racists, right? The people get really like this is yeah. What do you? I see these like these news shows and like they say outrage at.
Yeah,
and it's like, you know, outrage and Nazis and shit like that. I mean, when I grew up, man, I'm, you know, I don't know if it's similar, we're about the, in the, how old are you, bro?
I'm 35.
All right, so we're about 15 years different, yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. So in any event, when I grew up, like, Nazis and racists, that was some big deal shit. That was, those were big, man. Those were big money issues in my neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
If you were a Nazi, you could get got. You know, Nazis was a bad thing to call somebody, because that means they were, like, Nazis for the real, not just somebody who didn't agree with you on a completely, forum, right?
Yeah.
And racist, that was a big deal too. And it just seems like I've heard that word so much lately that it's like I don't want people getting desensitized to 100%. Being called a Nazi, you know.
That's a great point and a great example, because I'm not a violent man at all, but there was always, I think I've said it in interviews before, I've said it online, there was a journalist at one point, I can't remember his name now, but I used to keep note of his name, that I'd said, if I ever meet him, I'm going to punch him in his face because just to bring context into the fact that we live in the real world, because he'd written some review and in it he'd said that I was racist. And he was saying it because of in another interview I'd picked a handful of rappers I recommended and they were all white, I think. And again, it was like, I was listening to a lot of white rappers at that point. That doesn't mean I didn't come up on Rakim and KRS. It's like there's some underground guys I'm trying to push. But all this, and my point at that time was, I'm defensive about stuff like that. That's a serious thing. I've got.
It's a big ticket issue.
I've got a lot of races and cultures are within my family, so I'm very. I've got little cousins that the thought of anyone being racist to them, it flips me out.
Yeah, likewise.
So someone calling me racist, I was like, right, if that happened in face to face in real life, then
you might get knocked
it'd
the fuck
kick
out.
Off. Yeah. And that was it. It was,
you say it nicely, but somebody get fucked up.
100%.
You know?
And that was it. I just had this big thing of, it was really in the early days of people forgetting or starting to think that the internet isn't the real world.
Yeah.
And that was the weird thing. I had an argument with someone online last night, in fact, because I'd done some tweet. I'll go into full detail.
I done a tweet
that I'm looking for an empty swimming pool to do a photo shoot in. Mm-hmm. And I did this tweet.
It's old school skateboard stuff.
Exactly. And someone tweeted me and tagged the person it saying, oh, you should ask Michael Barrymore. And Michael Barrymore, again, yeah. I don't know what happened in that story, but the fact is a real life person was a real life place where another real life person died in a swimming pool.
Oh yeah, that Michael Barry. Yeah. Right, that happened a long time ago.
It was a
right?
long time ago, but again,
no, I remember hearing about that.
The
shit.
Fact that he tagged him on Twitter I blocked the dude, and then the dude came at me on Instagram saying, "Oh, you blocked me on Twitter," and I was like, "What you're not realizing is you're thinking of this as just a news story, but I don't know what happened in the ins and outs of that. No one was ever charged, all this, but I do know that a real person was somewhere where another real person died.
Yeah.
And that's more serious than your shitty joke on Twitter. Do you know what I mean? Let's make, if he just tweeted me saying, ask Michael Barrymore, I wouldn't have found it funny, but I wouldn't have blocked him. But the fact he tagged the dude, it's like,
oh, the guy who...
Yeah, he tagged the guy who was wow. there. So it's like, you're that's bringing up something thing. Horrible
the
into someone's life.
Got no class anymore. I think
exactly.
That's a lot of,
and,
the real
and that was
thing.
The thing. The guy who came at me again on Instagram, he then deleted all his... After I'd messaged back kind of saying, look, here's why. It's like, these are real people. He deleted his thing and deleted his Instagram account, weirdly. But again, I think people do need reminding every now and then that these are real people
do,
in
right?
the real
what,
world.
What would Bronx do?
What would Bronx do, exactly.
Don't go anywhere, because in this digital age, we can find where you went anyway.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Now, I had to get adjusted. I mean, I think I told you about it a little bit last time, but, like, you know, just my whole life up until, you know, probably since, the, I guess, the late 90s when social media started coming up and in, I had no idea that that would obviously take such precedence over our daily lives. But
yeah, man.
People go out at it, and like you say, they feel a certain way about something, but I don't know if it's actually, like, if they're really feeling that way or they feel compelled to do that for some kind of, like, scorecard in this whole, like, social media game.
Yeah.
I mean, if, I was always, you know, like, if you said something that I didn't agree with to me, I'd say, yo, dude, that's fucked up or whatever. Like, yo, why'd you come at me like that? And we'd talk about it, or we wouldn't talk about it, you know what I'm saying?
It could go either way.
But it seems like, you know, especially with the internet, if you say, like, dude, that's kind of fucked up, people don't want to hear that. They think they're completely right all the time, no matter how, what they feel is how it should be. And it's really subjective,
completely.
That shit.
It's the ugliness of making that public statement, I guess. I love learning.
Yeah.
I love having an opinion and finding out I was wrong.
Yeah, it's evolving, getting back to my thing.
And we don't have that online anymore. It's exactly that. It's like, no. Here's my belief. You're wrong. Yeah. You're wrong.
I believe this, like, since I was 5 years old. Wait, you didn't learn anything since you was 5 years old?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what kind of freaks me out. When I ask you about evolving, it goes from, like, you know, if you ask me what I believed wholeheartedly 10 years ago, say, okay?
Yeah.
Things have evolved. Things happen. People change. I became a father. My perspective changed. Things shift. That's just me personally. And that's, like, a lot of evolving. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, like, we're coming from being in the rap game to now, I mean, you're obviously, you know, a legendary podcaster at this point, but it's also, you had to evolve into actually almost being a referee for idiots sometimes, right?
Completely, and again, it's picking your battles there, but you will have the same as me, is again, completely right. My views and opinions have changed hugely in the last 10 years, but the awkward part of that is us recording music in that time. So you're going to have stuff that you've got on record in your lyrics that people will go, yeah, but you said this.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no, I said that. I've developed since then.
I wasn't in a fucking hermetically sealed case.
People talk as if you've sold out your beliefs over some stupid line that was just a throwaway thing that now you're like, no, I think that was kind of, I don't really agree with that outlook anymore. And they're like, well, you said it. It's like, think of every conversation that you've ever had in the last 10 years. It just happens that some of ours were documented and put on a little disc.
I mean, there are pictures of me that I'm like, damn, I fucking look like that. You know what I mean? For probably the better. I'm an older guy now. But just with certain shit like that, it's, you know, especially when people start talking politics, it's either like, if you don't necessarily automatically agree with somebody, it's that there's going to be issues. Like, if anything, people won't want to hear anybody else's point of view, which I find a little bit weird, because where I grew up, where everybody had a different perspective, it was middle Lower East Side of Manhattan, everybody comes from every different place, we all talked about everything else because that was important. And I think when people don't talk, and I guess dialogue stops and people call each other Nazis and racists,
and it just inflames either side. I did a post about that girl. There were some photos in Birmingham of a girl standing up to...
I saw that. She's like laughing at some dude's face.
And laughing and this guy's screaming. I posted that saying, this is great. I love seeing this. She's being calm and controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of discussion on it. And one guy who was a supporter of the EDL came on and made his point. And he made it really articulately. And he had legitimate worries and concerns mm-hmm. about organised religion, about all these different things. And a lot of it I didn't agree with, but I could see why he'd come to these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back saying, look, I see your points. My problem is that you've aligned yourself with a group like the EDL who aren't all as well thought out as you. I've grown up around a lot of these people in Thurrock and in South London that it is just about skin colour and mm-hmm. about a disrespect and a different level of class from depending on skin and background.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this kind of discussion. I was saying it's your aligning with them that's the problem. And it kept reasonably clean and pleasant. And then that post started to get shared that bit more. And when you get into that grander scope, so it's been shared to over 100,000 people, suddenly you're getting EDL members all coming on and talking nonsense and being racist. And equally, people from the left calling this guy a Nazi, a racist. It's like, he's not. He's got views I don't agree with, but at least he's articulating them and thought them out and seems open to being persuaded either way. And that was... That's the kind of thing. It started... The first hour of that post, I was like, man, this is cool. Everyone on here is being respectful and grown up. And then...
And then
I had to stop looking at it. Because, yeah, it was literally... I was getting notifications of people just... slagging each other off, and it's
Jim,
like,
the Nazi posted up.
Yeah, it's like, great, Jim's back.
Jim the Nazi, Jesus. But it is kind of weird, and I think it's. I mean, I think the essence of like human society is willingness to consider someone who doesn't agree with you a person.
Yeah,
you know, like I remember someone was talking about propagandists, and their job is to make someone look at another person as less than human.
Yeah.
That's the job. So once you do that and you think that dude's not human, he's subhuman because he doesn't believe in me, you got a lot of issues. That's when real Nazis come in, though, you know?
And that's the massive problem with our media in the UK and the US.
Look what they fucking did to Prince, man.
Yeah.
We're speaking, today's the 21st.
Yeah.
It's been a year since Prince died.
Yeah.
And all I fucking hear about is the pills that he took.
Yeah.
Not the pain that he was in or like the shit he had to do to get through his back issues and all the music that he created that was the best shit ever. It's really weird how they just...
Yeah, completely. It becomes a thing. It's crazy when he died. I'm like, Prince is probably my favourite single artist of all time. And when he died, I was kind of... I was sad. Equally, I was like, instantly there were people online saying, have you heard it was meant to be this? And heard it was like, I'm not interested in that, but... The thing that struck me was like in his, I can't remember the exact number, but something like in his 20-year career, he released 21 albums. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I can't, everyone's going, oh, it's such a shame, oh, we've missed this. It's like, you can't really say that. Dude has given us a lot. You know, we've got more than we could have hoped for from an artist. So the kind of, it's sad that he died, but my relationship with Prince hasn't changed in the last year. We never hung out.
Yeah.
It's not like we were homies. It's like I've still got that relationship with all of them songs and all of that music. So my sadness was for those who were close to him and those who knew him. But actually, as an individual, I was like, I can't be too sad, man. He's given me so much. He's given me so many albums and so much inspiration that, you know.
I think that's important because, you know, it's like this whole forum. If someone dies, it's like, you know, okay, let's rake it over. Let's have the post-mortem.
Yeah.
Like with David Bowie, that was really sad.
Yeah.
David Bowie's a cool dude, man. I had hung with him a couple times. Yeah. And, you know, he was really self-deprecating and funny.
Yeah.
He said some shit to me one time. It must have been like 2003.
Yeah.
Because the Iraq war started again. Me and him are having cigarettes because both our girls at the time knew each other. So they're hanging out.
Amazing.
I'm stuck with David Bowie. He's my cigarette buddy, right? Yeah. I'm down at the court building in Tribeca, right? It's the Tribeca Film Festival.
Yeah.
So I'm smoking a cigarette with him. He's like, Huey, I heard that you was in the Marines. I was like, yeah, I was, Dave. He's like, what do you think about this Iraq war shit? I was like, well, Dave, I don't know. What do you think? He goes, no one wants to hear what I think. I was like, why not? He goes, I'm a faggot married to a Muslim. And I was like, Dave, oh my God. And it was like, you know, that's fucking great that he has that kind of perspective on his own shit.
Yeah, 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 100%.
But like, it was just the funniest shit ever. And it's great because he's like, you know, someone who, you know, I guess never concerned himself with how other people thought of me. Actually found it amusing.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
And that's something I've always tried to aspire to. Like, people say shit about me. I broke a mug, but I told you about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you do dumb shit like that, and that's what people remember, because it was it was something that was out of the norm for you,
yeah, right? Or whoever. Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, you know, I always kind of remember that, like, I'm the one that looks at my face in the morning. Yeah. I'm the one that looks at my kids and my wife and that kind of shit. And that's what's important.
Yeah.
Not how other people see you. And that's kind of, that's cool. And
completely.
My relationship with David Bowie's music is the same,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly. And it is one of them. It's I mean, on that, it's that every time I've had something where I've said something bad online that hasn't worked out right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I messed up. But I'm also in the back of my head thinking, yo, I've said way worse shit than that no one knows. You know, it's kind of, I've fucked up worse, I've made bigger mistakes, I've looked stupider. So it's like, oh, I'll take that one on the chin. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. And Bowie's another great example of, man, that dude had a back catalogue and has given us a lot. I mean, you look at Bill Hicks, who had two specials and then died, really. So there's not a lot. And even Kurt Cobain. Yeah. Nirvana only had, what, 3 albums, I think it was, or whatever.
Yeah, 3 big ones.
And it's like, well, yeah, you can kind of look at them and go, oh, it feels like we've been cheated out of some greatness. Yeah. But with Prince, with Bowie, with people who started long ago and maintained all throughout. And again, a lot of people will, I posted a picture of Prince earlier, and someone posted saying, oh man, I love early Prince. And I was like, you should check some not early Prince. Yeah. His Artificial Age album, which was 2014, it's in my top 5 Prince albums. He was an amazing record, a bad dude. Not everything is going to appeal to every fan because of his variation in style. There were certain ones he released that I listened to. I was like, yeah, that's not for me. It didn't make me think, oh, Prince has dropped off. It's like, Prince is a varied artist.
Prince is making some shit that I don't get yet.
I'm going to enjoy this one day.
Yeah, one day I'll be getting into this. But he did, obviously he played all that shit. He did a record that my drummer Frankie, who's a big Prince fan, put me on to. This is back when Prince was alive. And he was out at, what's the guy? Gimme Tonight? George Benson. He was at George Benson's house in Hawaii. George Benson had a studio in his house. Prince was with his girl. He got bored. He went down and recorded an entire song, like drums, bass, guitar. It's called Glass Cutter.
Right.
And it's like a rock riff. And he was always the rock riff dude. He rocked it. You were like, shit, you're making us all look like we're standing still.
But it's one of
those riffs where you're like, holy shit. And he didn't put it out. And that's the thing. Wow. Nowadays, especially with people like Tupac dying and putting out 5 records after he dies, that's what's happening to Prince now, man. We're getting a new Prince record.
Because that's, I mean...
But we're listening to shit equally, he didn't want us to listen to, man.
I remember hearing an interview with Kevin Smith, and
he
directed a full video for Prince, and then Prince just went, all right, cool, bye.
Yeah, thanks,
and
man.
It's just in the vault. And it's like, he shot a video for almost every track he's ever released.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's not coming. It's like, that's exciting as to what's coming. And again, you hope that
Kevin Smith sits
in the right hands and all this kind of thing, but still, that's exciting.
That's good to know that's
Prince
happening.
Or no Prince, there's a lot of stuff that could see the light of day.
You know what I did hear, though? They had the lady who's the head engineer at Paisley Park.
Yeah.
She was getting interviewed right after he died.
Yeah.
And she said she was telling a story. And she was like, yeah, we were recording one day in the 80s. Like, she kept it real vague. One day in the 80s, and we had finished recording a song. And she said, frankly, it was as good as Purple Rain or Beautiful Ones. Yeah. And she was like, it was like that. It was just fucking epic. And something happened. Prince told us all to leave. He called us back in the studio like 10 minutes later, and he had erased the whole entire song. I mean, and the way they used to do it back in the day was 2-inch tape, so he had to erase every track. He had to go back and release tracks at a time and sync the two inches up. He really wanted that shit gone.
Yeah.
So this is a dude who would like take a shit and then just throw it over his shoulder, and the engineer lady would have to catch it, tape it together, and he didn't want this shit coming out. So it's like we're hearing, I don't know if I want to hear all Prince's kind of like
completely
incomplete thoughts.
It's a weird one because it's a tough balance, isn't it? Because
my relationship
stuff
will
that
change.
He didn't want to release, but stuff that he kept
yeah, he
and
kept
locked
it,
up.
Yeah,
it's
something
like that. It's like
it,
there's
a
balance. It's like I'd love it if someone close to him and musically on the same kind of plane could go in there and select and produce and go right. Let's put this out. Let's not put this out. Let's put it. So
I think
rather
she's
than,
doing stuff. I think she's actually, because she was like the lady who was closest to him like that.
Yeah.
I think she's in charge of a lot of the stuff that's getting released because it's doing through Paisley Park. So I think she's still on it. But it is trippy, man. And I did want to, before we kind of wrap it up, but I did want to talk about one thing about the calm zone.
Yeah.
Because that's something that's really important. We touched on it last time. I was talking to my wife out here. She's driving to the station. I was like, you know what I really like about Pip is that, you know, we talked about, like, things that I don't really talk about with people. And I think it's because we both got involved in the Calm Zone, which is a magazine about living miserably, you know, the fight against living misery for men.
Completely.
It's important. And recently I saw that Prince Harry started talking about him having himself to go to some, you know, some counseling when his mom died.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen for 20 years or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to talk to you about that. Like when I, obviously if something happens to you, the hardest thing for guys, men to do is to actually ask for help.
Completely. And this is, I mean, this is crazy time in here actually. Mm-hmm. And it's hugely, there's synchronicity here. I got involved with Calm in 2000 and probably 2008 maybe. And Calm was started up because, the leading cause of death in males in the UK between 20 and 30 or something is suicide. It's not drugs, it's not road traffic,
crazy.
It's crazy. And the reason I had a big connection with this, April 25th, which is next Tuesday, is the anniversary of my mate Jamie, who died when he took his own life when he turned 21 on his 21st birthday. But it's this beautiful thing because each year me and a few mates go around and drink with his mum and dad and we catch up. And it's this thing. He was going through some stuff and he chose, at the time, I was like, this is the worst thing. He needed help. But then you realise, well, a suicide in itself is a confusing and weird thing. I'm now at peace with his choice because he didn't get the help he wanted. And from the sounds of it, he set himself a date. He said, if it's not sorted by my 21st birthday, I'm done with this. Do you know what I mean? It's selfish on my part to say, no, you should have kept kept going. If he's done. But we meet up every year on the 25th. And it's genuine. It's my favourite day of the year. It's a beautiful thing. We meet up and we remember. And we go and sit on a bench that we got a plaque for him that says, this view's for everyone. Because he was a big fan of your record and the album. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's why we've got that on the beat, on the bench. And it's this beautiful thing. That's why it's a weird synchronicity thing. It's like, I'll be going there on Tuesday, you know. But yeah, I got involved with Calm because of that. Because it's something that isn't discussed enough. And I remember when Jay died, I was like, I didn't know he was in this bad place. I didn't know it was that bad. And I felt guilt because, as mates, we all take the piss out of each other and rib each other. So I'm sitting there thinking, so maybe that time I was taking the piss out of his jacket, maybe that was
serious,
going into his head and taking it seriously. And it's because of a lack of conversation. And it's why in my music and on the podcast and with Calm, I've tried to talk about this stuff as openly as possible. Because the fact is, that's fine. Like it's one of the oldest things. What people, it seems to be number one, a very British thing because of the stiff upper lip. But just a manly macho thing. Yeah. And the fact is, going back to cavemen or people living in villages, you'd go to the shaman or the elders.
He understood.
You'd seek
been
advice.
There.
We've got in this world where we're all connected through social media and everything else, yet we've never been so insulated at the same time. You know, so it's great to have these avenues where people can talk and it be seen as okay. And Calm and the Samaritans and all of these are great ones.
See, I come from the same kind of, I lost, like four guys that were direct friends of mine through self-inflicted type of shit. A couple of them went out pretty quickly on their own hand. A couple of them took a while with drugs and stuff.
Yeah.
But, and these guys were tough Marines, you know, and that's the thing that kind of threw me. That, I mean, there's a horrible statistic. It's like 22 vets a day in America kill themselves. It's just fucking horrible. Because these guys, you know, they're my brothers, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And even though I haven't been a Marine for a long time, it's a thing. And, you know, I thought it was really important. I was told years ago, I don't know if I used it, I told you this about the bag you carry on your back.
It's like that was
it. That was your pack, you know, and everybody's got their shit in their bag, right? And this guy who told me this, he had a lot of shit in his bag, and he knew because he actually opened it up and arranged it so when he put it back on, it wouldn't cut into his back and make it more uncomfortable. And I think that analogy stuck with me so hard.
Completely accepting that there's problems and that there's things to do with, rather than just trying to deny it or And again, I think that's another thing. It can become a taboo that if you're getting help that you're mental or you're broken or things like that. It's like, no, everyone's got some shit going on.
Yeah, and it's like to think that someone else can't identify with you, or that I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of men, especially considered strong or tough guys, like Marines or just dudes of the city who think they're gangsters or whatever.
Yeah.
Those guys are the most sensitive, I think, because I've always found that the pendulum, in my case, swings as tough as I am, is as soft as I can be.
You know, I mean,
you see me holding my daughter. It's like I'm a dad. That's my heart, my huge heart.
Yeah.
And then I could turn around if you wanted to do something to my family and just be the most ruthless motherfucker ever.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of led me to kind of want to help out with the comm. And the lady got with me about it, and you know, I was like, oh shit. And if I could, you know, hit anybody with any kind of advice, which I don't really like giving advice because I'm not that type of dude, but it was like, you know, just find somebody, even if you don't think that they've been through what you've been through, especially with like dudes that have been in inner city problems or whatever, just anybody who doesn't directly relate to somebody that might help, if like a sociologist or a psychologist or whoever, if they're willing to talk to you, they know some shit you might not know.
Yeah.
And maybe you could take that and, you know, just use a little bit of the toolage, you know, to help your situation out. And
that's exactly the realization is, number one, there are a load of people who have been through exactly the same as you and can relate. But number two, there's people who haven't, and that's why they can help. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because they're not from your ends or not. They're not the people you've grown up around. They're going to go, all right, well, how about this? And it's something that you wouldn't have ever been able to see because of where you've grown up and the world you've lived in. Someone outside that can go, oh, yeah, but look, you could just do this instead. And you're, I couldn't have seen that.
Yeah, I mean, the perspective, I think, is a lot of what it's about, right? And like we were talking about when you said people are very insulated now.
Yeah.
And that is the case, because it's almost as if, you know, if you have a problem, why can't you just go on Google and find the answer to that problem?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes it's actually human contact that you need.
100%.
You know, and being vulnerable, and that's a thing for men, being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Is not a weak thing. It's not, you know, it's not something that's bad. Sometimes you have to be to understand the world.
Yeah.
And like, we're all here for a very fucking short period of time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I said, it's, you know, life's too short to listen to shitty music.
Yeah.
Life's too short not to know yourself.
And that's the thing that's key as well. I was talking to a friend a while back, and they hit me up and said, I'm going through some rough times. And it's not someone I know that well. It's kind of someone I've met through being who I am online or whatever, and we're chatting, and I was like, have you spoken to your friends about it? And they're like, no, they wouldn't understand. And I was like, well, if you feel, if they would have no idea that you're going through it, then you have no idea which ones of your friends are going through it. Chances are, most times I've spoken about anything kind of heavy or dark, I've had a friend that goes, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I wanted to, you know, I've not been able to discuss it. So even if you look at it in a selfless way of, I'm going to approach this with my friends, not because I need the help, but in case they need the help. Do you know what I mean?
If you want to flip the psychology around, like, as long as it gets out. And also, if they're your friends, you could talk to anything. You could talk about anything with them, because if you can't, they're not really your friends.
Yeah.
And it's better to know now, right?
100%. Yeah, but as I said, it's amazing. I think Calm and the Samaritans and all of these, providing a service in a way where you can just, if you're not ready to talk to your friends even, where you can just talk to someone that doesn't know, is never going to know who you are.
And see, sometimes
you can just
that's
go,
the best way.
I'm just saying this out loud and getting it off my chest. It's weird with a writing music, because it took me years to realise how much of that is therapy.
Oh yeah, it's just, so cathartic.
By the time a record comes out, it's just words.
Yeah,
you've drilled it so much, it's kind of lost some of the meaning that was originally in there. And I'll be doing interviews years later, and someone will go, "This is," and I'll be like, "Oh wow, yeah, that was a really heavy time in my life. I've moved on from it now, and I do that song every night, and don't remember that it's that." So
we evolved, dude.
That getting it off your chest. I've been lucky enough to get that off my chest into a vocal that's wrapped up and tied up. Mm-hmm. Onto the next problem.
I think it's true. Also, like, sometimes just saying something that you're feeling, once you kind of like almost give it air, you know, throw some oxygen on it, which we used to say, like, if you could say it out loud, it's not as scary if you can say it out loud.
100%. Yeah.
And also, because if someone hears you and they go, "Me too." You're not alone.
Yeah.
So I mean, I always thought that was kind of a cool thing that I learned over the years. And it's like we talk about evolution, us evolving. I'm really happy that I've evolved to this point. And I'm glad you evolved to this point, because it's like, it's great to be able to sit and talk with you,
bro. Yeah, I appreciate it.
No, my pleasure, man. So I'll tell you all about how to get that. And,
Yeah.
Because where are you going? You're going out to L.A.?
Yeah, I'm doing L.A. It's a crazy one. It's weird how the podcast, again, as we said, generally everything I do, it's stuff that I'm into and just want to do. Like, yeah. I was listening to a lot of podcasts. I wanted to make some. And it's at the point now where big films will be coming out Universal will hit me up saying, oh, can we put our guy on your podcast? And it's like,
you can fly me out,
dude,
to,
I'm a big fan. And that's it.
LA, put me up at the Chateau Montmartre with a villa, and you can put that dude on
exactly.
my show.
I've literally got a situation where I'm being flown to LA to do a podcast, and I can all, again, like particularly where
I got
I'm
some
now,
people out there take you around if you want.
Yeah. I might have to hit you up.
Get Everlast out there, exactly drive me around this Escalade. You're homie.
Yeah. See, they were. They hit me up and they were like, oh, we'll fly you out on this date and this date. And I was like, well, since you're flying me out, do you want to fly me out early? I ain't going for like 2 days.
Yeah, don't fly me out for a day.
Let's go
and
for
half.
A week. Yeah. It's like, I don't mind. It's just, I can get shit done. I can work
does
out.
Does ACAST have a studio in LA now?
I think they do. Boom. Yeah, exactly.
Boom.
And that's it. But that's it. Because the thing I'm going to is like a games conference type thing. As we discussed on when you were on my podcast, I've got a hell of a lot of kit.
Yeah.
So one of these things that can be handheld that I can just...
And you can pop a little headphone in there too, so you can hear stuff. So you know if you're on mic.
And make sure it's all
at
the right levels.
Yeah, I think we've been recording this pretty good, dude.
Yeah.
Well, dude, I'm glad you take the time out to hang with me, man. You're a good dude.
I appreciate it.
I've always understood that where you come from is a good place, and now I know that place better. But
yeah,
no, appreciate it, man.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you're into podcasting now as well.
Hey, man, you know,
you're welcome to the family.
I appreciate you being so welcoming, man. I do that. Now I got to take a picture of you and me.
Let's do it. All right.
So yes, we got deep and real on that one, and I was honored to be on the pod with Pip, man. Next up, we have Danny Clinch, another longtime buddy of mine and rock and roll insider. He's a legendary music photographer and Grammy-nominated director as well. He's worked with everyone from Johnny Cash to Tupac, Bjork to Bruce Springsteen, Willie Nelson, Tom Waits, Pearl Jam, Foo Fighters, Dave Matthews, President Barack Obama. You're getting the picture, right? This guy is all that. So until next time, don't forget to subscribe to the pod. That way you'll never miss an episode. And be nice. Leave us one of them 5-star reviews while you're at it up on iTunes. And until next time, y'all stay classy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.